You're listening to MLB.com Extras, brought to you by MLB.tv. It's baseball everywhere.
Hi, this is Phil Rogers. This is MLB.com Extras, American League Central Edition, talking about a Royals team that's been the best in the American League, heading toward the All-Star game with a full boat of Royals All-Stars, and a couple very interesting teams trying to stay on their heels. The Detroit Tigers getting a big lift from J.D. Martinez of late, and the Minnesota Twins looking forward to the debut of Irvin Santana later in the week. How you doing?
Doing well.
Well, the Twins squad still, definitely a team people would look at as having had a very impressive first half, unexpected contender. But a team that was in first place on June 7th and now has slid behind the Royals in June, 10-16 record as we speak. If you had to point to one thing that the Twins were doing earlier that they haven't done that could maybe get them back on the winning way, what would you point to, Rep?
I would think that right now at this point it's probably just hitting with runners in scoring position. I think early in the season, the offense was off to a hot start, and they're hitting really well in those kind of clutch situations, and it's kind of dried up a little bit this month. The starting pitching has still been really solid. The ERA out of the staff has been, probably in the top 10 in the majors throughout the season and even throughout the month, even with this bad month. So I think more than anything, it's just going to kind of get that offense going. Obviously, last year, the offense was obviously the strongest part of this team, finishing seventh in the majors and runs scored. But so far this season, we haven't really seen that. Nobody on the team offensively is really having a huge breakout season, really, in a sense. Obviously, Brian Dozier's having a nice year. Torrey Hunter's still producing. Trevor Plouffe. But at the same time, the offense hasn't fully clicked yet. And I think that the hope is that the pitching kind of keeps it up. And obviously, they get a big boost when Irvin Santana returns. And if the offense can kind of pick it up the second half of the season, that's going to be key for them.
Yep. Last 22 games, they averaged only 3.4 runs per game. And you're right. All those the young hitters that were so impressive in the second half of last year, Kenny Vargas and Danny Santana, those guys, struggled to pick it up where they were going. You touched on Hunter. He's on track to finish with 20 plus home runs for the first time since 2007. And it seems like every time I watch the Twins, you see him doing something that's intriguing. Has he just been a bigger part of a successful team kind of than people projected? I know the thought in spring training was mentor, role model, and, cute story that he's finishing up where he started. But it seems like Torrey just keeps going and going.
Yeah, you're definitely right. I think you're right. I think early on when he signed, it was kind of one of those things where, homecoming, one-year deal, you can play with the Twins and retire with them and kind of a feel-good story, and you can mentor some of these young guys like Byron Buxton and Aaron Hicks. But then he forgot that, the last couple of years with the Tigers, he was pretty productive. A guy that, he usually hit around 18 homers, drove in maybe 80 runs or so, still could hit maybe 280 and get on base a little bit. So so far he's doing that again this year. I mean, he hasn't dropped off at all. You're right, he's on pace now to even hit more home runs in the last couple of years. Had a two-homer game there against the Brewers over the weekend. And the power numbers are real. So it's one of those things where it's a big plus for the Twins. It ends up being a great signing for them because they not only get a guy that really is a great mentor and a big clubhouse guy, but a guy who's also kind of producing with the bat. And we'll see kind of how they kind of line the defense once Buxton and Hicks and all those guys get back. We could see maybe Torrey DH-ing a little bit more. But for now, he's been fine and right. I mean, there's been a couple plays that you kind of scratch your head a little bit. But for the most part, he's been fine defensively and right. And obviously, offensively, he's been a big boost. So overall, I think the signing really couldn't have gone any better for the Twins so far.
And you mentioned Byron Buxton, and unfortunately forced on the disabled list, injured his left thumb, sliding into a base, and on the DL, only got 37 at bats in his first stint with the Twins. What was your overview? I mean, I know he batted under 200. But it seemed like with the plays in the field and the speed, he did kind of put all those tools on display.
Exactly. I mean, the big thing was he struggled offensively a little bit. Obviously, a lot of strikeouts. I think that's tough for him because he's one of those guys who's kind of been a slow starter at every level. He likes to track pitches and that kind of stuff. kind of see what these pitchers have to offer, and it's the first time for him facing these guys. And I think, too, he'd never really seen the kind of breaking stuff that these guys, you know, he saw a lot of really good pitchers. And that stretch that he was up, the Twins just happened to run into a lot of good starting pitchers over that stretch. And so, you know, Chris Sale obviously ate them up with 4 strikeouts, and some of these guys, you know, Lester, and some of these tough pitchers, you know, suffered him to kind of adjust on these breaking balls, especially from the right-handers, actually, kind of breaking the balls away from him. So, but offensively, with his speed, you know, he could hit a little ground ball and get on base. You know, stealing bases was kind of a little bit of a struggle for him, but I think that's something he'll get better at with time, with more work with Paul Molitor and kind of getting better jumps and reads. And defensively, he's already, you know, a great defender in center field. So it's just a bummer for the Twins, obviously, to have a guy of that caliber to go down for 4 to 6 weeks. They had an interesting decision to make anyway when Aaron Hicks returned. They could have decided to bring back Hicks as their center fielder for now and let Buxton maybe go to AAA and maybe kind of get some more at-bats there. But obviously that kind of was made for them. He's going to have to be on the DL now here for 4 to 6 weeks, and we'll kind of see what they decide to do with Hicks here. I think for in the short term, looks like we'll start seeing some more Danny Santana in center field like we did last year. So it was tough to see him go down. But at the same time, I think the Twins will probably have him going to rehab assignment for a little while and AAA, maybe see if he can see some better pitching there. And maybe give him a little bit of a boost there late in the second half of the season.
You mentioned Ervin Santana, and he had the 80-game PED suspension, huge buzzkill when it came out, wiping out his first half of the season. But we're almost to that 80 games, and I know he's been rehabbing in the minors. What's the plan for Santana, and how significant is the feeling around the Twins that he could be? And I think it's maybe tempered. It's not like this is a team that's been, needing starting pitching. Third in the American League with a 3.82 ERA from the rotation.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, the rotation right now has been a pleasant surprise. We know how they finished dead last in ERA the last 2 seasons. So when Santana went down with the suspension, it was, the rotation is already kind of the weak link of this team. How are they going to even, you know, stay afloat with that? And sure enough, all of a sudden now the starting pitching has probably been their strongest point this year, and they're able to kind of keep it together there, obviously off to a surprising start in general. And Santana, the plan for him right now is he's obviously making those 3 rehab starts with AAA Rochester. Got one more, which would slate him to return on Sunday. He's making his last one on Tuesday, which would slate him for return on Sunday. He's eligible to return Saturday. And I think the plan is for to have him start on Sunday in Kansas City. But the Twins still don't really know yet exactly what they're going to do with that rotation. They could decide to take out rookie Trevor May, who's coming off a tough start against the Brewers. But otherwise, has been solid. Because Tommy Malone, the lone lefty in there, who came up when Ricky Nolasco got hurt, has also pitched pretty well, too. And obviously, we know how good Pelfrey's been, how good Gibson's been. And still, Hughes seems to kind of get back on track now after his strong season last year. So, you're right. It's not going to be maybe the big shot in the arm, just because the pitching has been pretty good this year. If anything, they probably need a little bit more offensive help. But obviously, we know how good Ervin Santana is, and it's going to be an added big addition for this team, is almost like adding him at the trade deadline. The tough thing, obviously, is if they make the playoffs, he can't pitch in the postseason, which would be tough. But at this point, it's just kind of one of the things that they can get there. And he's it's going to be a big addition, and we'll kind of see how he does, because obviously he's been rusty, not pitching for, other than the rehab starts now for the last couple months here.
Yeah, and last topic, Brett, the All-Star game a year ago, the Twins hosted it. Glenn Perkins was a big part of it on the American League team, and it looks like he's had another year where he would be a strong candidate. I know Brian Dozier must be a strong candidate. Are those the top 2 guys? Is there anybody else that you would think would receive serious all-star consideration as the team gets put together over the next week?
Yeah, I think Perkins and Dozier are definitely the top 2 candidates. I think Perkins is a lock at this point. I mean, he still hasn't blown a save yet to this point, and was an all-star the last 2 years. So I think he's pretty much a lock. I think Dozier has a good shot. We'll kind of see how that last ballot update goes. If Omar Infante gets voted in, it might be tough to find him a spot just because we know how good Jason Kipnis is, too, with the Indians and Altuve and Pedroia. Second base is a tough one in the AL. But I think that if Altuve ends up winning it, there's going to be a chance that him and Kipnis maybe get there as all-stars. in the rotation, no one really has the gaudy win totals, but ERA-wise, you know, Kyle Gibson and Pelfrey have good ERAs, but I'd still be surprised if either of them made it. I think at this point, Perkins for sure, and a chance at Dozier.
All right. Thank you very much, Rhett. The man in the trenches. How you doing, Jason?
Good. How are you?
Very well, very well. Coming off a weekend when doing this from Chicago, I'm probably better off than the average White Sox fan still reeling from the Victor Martinez whack off of Jeff Samardzija, made a 4-0 lead disappear in a hurry. But in fairness, the Tigers needed those wins too. I mean, you've got a Tigers team trying to kind of keep footing with the Royals, trying to stay in sight in the American League Central. The Tigers now have won, as we speak, 5 of the last 7, get back to 3 games over .500. One guy that's been a key lately, J.D. Martinez, a guy who seems like a streaky hitter. Sometimes you forget about him when you look at the middle of the Tigers' order, and he always seems to remind you that he's there. In this stretch, 9 home runs in the last 13 games, hitting .321. Any keys you can point to for that got J.D. Martinez going so hot?
Well, I know he was getting pitched a little bit differently during the cold streak that was going on a few weeks ago. I think he adjusted to that a little bit, and I think him and Wally Joyner had worked on some stuff. I think there was a little bit of focus on and this is something that you kind of anticipated with him, just adjusting to the way you're being pitched and getting an expectation of what's going to come next. And I think that's something that's been pretty underrated about him this year, because you look at last year, and he really pounded fastballs as guys tried to attack him, and you figured that teams were going to be adjusting to him in that sense. Well, he's got a pretty good idea. You know, he's a meticulous note taker. He has a good idea of when guys are going to try to attack him and when they're going to make him go fish. And I think he's kind of taken that into his game right now. And I think what impresses me so much is that just the ability to have so much of his contact be solid, authoritative contact. It's something that even from top hitters, I don't know if you see it as quite as high of a ratio as what he's had seemingly had going right now.
Yeah, it just seems like, that strength. He's such a strong guy that when he barrels the ball up, it almost seems like reading his quotes after the weekend against the White Sox, when he had homers on Friday and on Saturday hit his 19th of the year. You know, he sounded almost like he's surprised when he drives out of the ballpark. But I just see such a physically strong guy.
Yeah. That's a safe assumption. And the other thing is too, his ability to hit the ball out to all fields. I think people in Detroit appreciate. I don't know how much people outside Detroit appreciate. I think he's gained reputation for it, but really, he's got the best all fields power I think I've seen from a Tiger since outside of Cabrera in recent years.
Yeah, that's impressive. Another development in the last few days with the Tigers that to me seems like it could be a significant one is Bruce Rondon joining the bullpen. He was throwing 101 in his first outing when he blew away Jose Abreu, a guy that obviously a lot was expected from when he was younger before he ran into all of his injuries. How big could he be for Brad Ausmus and that Tigers bullpen?
I think he could be huge. I've thought that really ever since spring training. I feel like he's been, the missing piece for this bullpen ever since the end of 2013. I think if they'd had him back during that playoff run 2 years ago, it could have been a vastly different outcome. And I think when you look at the travails the bullpen had last year, a large part of it revolved around trying to fill that void left by Bruce Rondon in the Tommy John surgery. They never had that overpowering, you know, situational, you know, high-powered strikeout guy that he brings. And if he can get back to that point, and, you know, if he can do it consistently, you know, I think that bullpen looks vastly, vastly different. Even if he's not necessarily the full-time eighth-inning guy, just being able to have that type of presence in the eighth inning makes a manager think if he's looking through the batting order. Really, both managers, because you have to think about how you're going to line up your hitters and maybe use a pinch hitter. But also, it gives Brad Ausmus a weapon that, outside of Albuquerque on his hot streaks, he hasn't had. I'm surprised by how hard he's been able to throw coming out, because, I mean, he approached that in Toledo during a rehab assignment and then the subsequent, option down there. But he didn't hit it to the degree that he did, he did this weekend. And I know that you have to account for the differences in radar guns and everything. We've all written ad nauseum about that. But still, it seems like it took this opportunity for Rondon to get that adrenaline to answer the bell, to use, you know, to kind of, I guess, you know, use a tired analogy. That he really kind of he needed that major league situation to get the adrenaline going. Now, how does he sustain that? How does he use that to his advantage without putting too much stress on the elbow? Can he still mix in the pitches? That's something I think that you're going to have to see over the next few weeks. And I think that could have a huge impact on how the Tigers approach this trading season.
Yeah, if he could hold up and you could have him with Soria, I mean, you have to go back a long time, I would think, to find the Tigers with a 1-2 combination like that at the back of the bullpen. It would definitely change the dynamics. Alex Avila has been out on the disabled list since May 9th. But what I'm kind of struck by as he gets close to returning, James McCann really played well when Avila was out, is playing well with Avila out. No surprise there. I mean, this is a guy that the Tigers have rated highly and felt would be a big piece in their organization at some point.
Oh yeah, yeah. This is this was a little bit quicker than expected. They had to rush the process with the Avila out, but I think this is the James McCann I think a lot of guys in the organization saw coming. As he was coming up through the system, at least the last couple of years, once he started hitting at Double A, maybe a little bit more power punch than a lot of people might have expected. I guess it's safe to say he had the average last couple of years coming up, but not necessarily the power. And I think you're starting to see a little bit of that power emerge. I wouldn't expect him to be kind of a thumper bat or nothing like that, but at least the threat. And especially the situations he seems to be hitting for power in, it is a pleasant surprise for these guys. Now, that said, I think there's a pretty big place for Avila in this lineup once he returns, because this lineup leans so heavily right-handed without him. I think he helps balance the lineup out a little bit if he can hit, for at least some respectability.
Listen, Justin Verlander very well. I can't imagine how crazy he's been going over the last 10 days or 2 weeks after he got back and rejoined the Tigers and then made only a couple starts and had the back issue that caused him to be skipped in the rotation. And now he's got the all-clear to rejoin the rotation. How's he been handling that?
Surprisingly well. I figured he would be a basket case during the whole DL stint, and he handled it surprisingly, not nonchalant, but just very calm, very deliberate with how he had to go about things. And I think he showed a lot of maturity into being able to see the long-term picture ahead of the short-term sacrifice. And I think that continued once he was out with the, with the back issues. I think it's going to be curious to see whether that type of maturity translates into what we see out of him once he comes back. Is this a sign of a guy who's transitioning into that next phase of his career, where he becomes that older style of pitcher who has more of a mix and is less fastball centric? And I think that's been the lingering question for a lot of Tigers fans regarding Verlander, really since the end of last season.
I'm sure a couple of good starts here before the All-Star break would do a lot for everybody's confidence in Verlander for the second half. Obviously, he's going to be a key to whether the Tigers can run down the Royals in the Central and return to the playoffs, as everyone always expects the Tigers to do. Jason Beck, thank you very much. Jeff, how you doing?
I'm doing fine. How you doing, Phil?
I'm doing great. Got a Royals team that's been winning 5 of 6 out on the West Coast at Oakland and Seattle, finishing up that trip at Houston, and then home against the Twins. You look at the record in June, it's kind of like, to me, back April 15 and 8 in June, and it just seems like kind of clicking along or figuring it out on a daily basis. What would you point to for kind of the strength of how well they've been playing in this last stretch?
I think, they went through this two-week period recently, which Ned, referred to as the quiet bat period, and that's sort of behind them now. I think over the last couple of weeks now, they're hitting as a team over around 308, and that's been a big help. Also, recently, especially on this road trip, their starting pitching has been really, really good. So you're seeing a team that, is getting closer and closer to hitting on all cylinders, and I don't think they're quite there yet. They've had a couple of defensive lapses, which is very uncharacteristic of them lately. I think they can still hit for a little bit more power. There's still some guys who are kind of dragging. Alex Rios has not been the same since he's been back from his broken hand. Omar Infante is starting to heat up a little bit. Sal's starting to heat up. Perez starting to heat up a little bit. But I still don't think this team has reached their full potential, which sounds kind of strange because they're sitting at 16 games over 500 and the best record in the league. But I just think that, and they've had a, patched together rotation. I still think they can be even better than they are right now. So that's probably a little bit scary for other teams.
Yeah, best record in the league. And I think if you ask around, the pretty much consensus best team in the league. But this week, the start of the week, first time ever that a Royals team and an Astro team have met with both teams in first place. I mean, maybe not that odd given that Houston was a National League team until fairly recently, but you got the two teams with the best records in the American League. Any kind of a feeling amongst the Royals that this is a big series? I mean, it seems like you certainly wouldn't have circled it on the calendar when the season started.
No, but I'll tell you, Houston has their attention. Ned Yost and his staff have talked about Houston and their young players getting better and better for a couple of years now. So they're certainly not going to walk in there and take anybody lightly. They really like the young players like Springer and really impressed with their pitching staff. So that's it's going to be a good matchup. It's going to be fun to watch just as a fan if you're just tuning in. Two pretty darn good teams right now, and I think there's probably some reservations around the league whether Houston can maintain this throughout the year. But the Royals are not one of them. They think they're a solid bunch, and they've seen them firsthand for the last few years get better and better. And as a matter of fact, Houston swept them here last year at the end of May. That's probably the low point of the season, and that led to some shakeup in their coaching staff, where Dale Swain became the new hitting coach and Pedro Grifol was reassigned. And so that series was a really ugly series here, where they even got booed at home. That was last May, a year ago May, and so they still have that memory, and so they have a lot of respect for Houston, and it should be an interesting three games.
talking about one of the things that hasn't gone right for him, even though they have the best record in the league, is the guy that was expected to be their ace, Yordano Ventura. Yeah, it seems like it's been one thing or another with him all year. And most recently, the issue with his hand. He did have a rehab start on Friday, if I'm right. I think he worked into the fifth inning in that start. What's the outlook for getting him back?
Well, Ned doesn't really need another starter till this Sunday because of the off days they've had. So he's going to make another rehab start in Omaha on Wednesday. That puts him on schedule to come back for that Sunday start. The scouting report they got on Yordano in that first rehab start was pretty impressive. The line may not look great, but he gave up a home run, and then he left the game with a couple runners on, and those runners ended up scoring. But he got his pitch count up to 75, which is right where they wanted it. And he got his velocity up to 97. So they were pretty impressed with that, and there was no problems with his right hand, which had been suffering from right-hand weakness because of inflammation around the ulnar nerve. So all systems seem go for him to make one more rehab start and come back on Sunday. And they really need him. I mean, they were counting on him to be their ace this year. And like you mentioned, you know, he's had all kinds of issues, whether it's cramps or suspensions or, you know, ulnar nerve inflammation, a temper tantrum at times. You know, so he needs to get healthy and get mentally healthy, so to speak, because it's great that they have this much depth and they've survived without him to some degree. But in the long run, they need the guy who stepped up in Game 6 and shut out the Giants. That's who they need, and that's who they're hoping to get.
Well, we are moving closer to the All-Star announcement. As we do this podcast, we're talking today at Monday, and the final update on voting is due later today. On Monday, the team will be announced, or the starters announced on Sunday, and the rest of the team next Monday. You know, last update, there were 7 Royals position players position to go. When I break that down, I come up with 4 guys that have leads that I don't think can be caught. That would be
right.
Not in order, but Escobar, Perez, Kane, and Gordon. Not sure about Morales, who was leading, but close. Not sure about Moustakas leading and close. And then the polarizing Omar Infante pick at second base. Not sure if he can hold on to that. But so 4 to 7 position players. Looking beyond that at the pitchers, you know, it seems like Wade Davis is a given, that whether it's the players' vote or however it is, he's
right.
been one of the best pitchers in the league. I don't see how he could be left off. Do you think they can get a pitcher on beyond that? Do you think the bullpen's reputation, Greg Holland's pitched great, but he had the spin on the disabled list. What do you think? Do they have a strong pitching, an argument? And if it gets down to Ned Yost having a vote, I mean, he's going to want to have those relievers on there, I would think. So how many pitchers would you expect to be on that team, Kansas City?
Yeah, I think beyond Wade Davis, it's just got to be a slam dunk because he's probably the best reliever in baseball right now. I don't know if you'll see Greg Holland or not. He's looked much better the last couple of weeks, but he kind of wasn't himself the first couple of months of the season, and he had some injuries, too, with the pectoral injury. You know, he's only blown one save, and the Royals came back and won that game, so he got the W himself. But I don't know if Ned will force that one down everyone. But I'll throw another name out there that who is very deserving is Chris Young, who's 7-3 now with a 2.7 ERA, and has really been one of the best starting pitchers in the American League. It'd be a great story if he got there. He started out this season in the bullpen, wasn't signed until into spring training, started out as a long man, and stepped in the rotation, and for one reason or another has just besides being just phenomenally effective on the mound, he stayed in the rotation. I really think he's had an all-star type of season. If you're to ask me one guy in the rotation who's been the most valuable guy, I would say it's probably Chris Young. I mean, he's just really solidified what's been a very uneven, unstable rotation right now. So I think, you know, and it may be a long shot that he makes it, but I would say Wade Davis for sure, And then probably after that, maybe Chris Young. And Omar Infante, you going back to the voting, his lead was actually increasing over Altuve. So, you know, I think they might even get, we'll find out later today how much that lead is. But I think Moose will get caught probably by Josh Donaldson because all of Canada is voting for Josh Donaldson. So, and Nelson Cruz will probably catch Kendrys Morales at DH. But Omar was extending his lead at second base, so we'll see how that works out. And that would give them five starters and probably plus Wade Davis and maybe even Chris Young and maybe an outside shot for someone like Holland.
Yeah, it's going to be great to see that Kansas City group traveling to Cincinnati for the game. Thank you very much, Jeff, for Jeff Flanagan. This is Phil Rogers. This has been MLB.com Extras, Kansas City Royals edition. As we speak today, 9-15 in June, the stretch run of the first half, and heading into what looks like a challenging week, playing at the surprising Rays in Tampa Bay, and then from there on to Pittsburgh to play a team everybody expected to be strong. Jordan, how you holding up?
Doing fine, man. I'm holding up a lot better than the Tribe right now, I'll tell you that much.
Yeah, well, that's understandable. And, you know, looking at this run in June, you know, and you see some numbers that just show, you know, not only are guys not hitting the way you'd want, but when they're hitting has been bad. I was struck by you got a team that has the second best OPS when the bases are empty and the fourth worst when there's runners on base. 61 home runs, 44 solo home runs. Yeah, I know you study the numbers. How much of this do you think is random, and how much of this is, any kind of a common denominator breakdown that you could point to that could be improved?
Yeah, I mean, that's obviously been kind of the story of the offense this year, one of the main reasons why the Indians are where they are in the standings right now. I mean, they're pitching for the most part. While disappointing at times, has kind of done their part. And the bullpen has shored up, you know, the last couple months after a rough April. The rotation has gotten some solid contributions. Even Corey Kluber, you know, you look at his record, it's pretty ugly, but, you know, he's dealing with the worst run support among qualified major league starters right now. And that's been an issue for a lot of the starters. And, you know, as you mentioned, that discrepancy between hitting with no one on base versus hitting with runners on, just generally speaking, not even runners in the scoring position, which is another issue where they rank near the bottom of baseball. You know, that's been pretty glaring. I think that's one of those things where you would look at it as kind of an anomaly, you know, something that you would hope over the course of a full season would help even out a little bit. But, I mean, they're digging themselves quite a hole right now. And, you know, even if they start to close that gap between the difference between bases empty and runners on, you know, you hope that they're not too far back in the standings to kind of make up that difference. So, again, I think that's something that would even out over time over the course of a long season. The one thing that I might point to that could be a contributing factor besides just simply not making adjustments would be that they have a lineup filled with guys who have a propensity for striking out. You know, whether it's Brandon Moss or some of those other guys in the lineup, you know, they usually, for their career record, have had high strikeout rates, but they've made up for that in other ways, whether it be driving in runs or, you know, hitting for power. And some of that has gone away. Carlos Santana's not hitting for the power that they had hoped. Moss, his numbers across the board are pretty relative to his career, but I would say he's not producing as expected. They've had issues with Yan Gomes not hitting offensively very well since he came back from that knee issue. You know, and the lineup just through the middle of it has been a mess. I mean, when Ryan Rayburn and David Murphy, who are a platoon, are two of your better hitters in the lineup right now, you know, that's speaking to some of the issues that are going on with some of the regular contributors.
And, you know, coming off a weekend in Baltimore, it'd be about the worst a team can have, where not only do they get swept, but they get rained out and then play doubleheader, fail to score in either game of the doubleheader. And just looking at a couple of those hitters in particular, you mentioned Carlos Santana. Two for his last 26 was runners in scoring position. Is there something that, I mean, you can see him pressing? It's clear that this is a guy that just, you know, needs something to turn around, you know, the big hit to get him turned around.
Yeah, I think so. He's always been a really streaky hitter, and within those streaks, the one thing he's always done well is get on base via the walk. You know, last year, I believe, he led the majors in walks. This year, he's up there again, despite his low batting average and his poor production with runners in scoring position. I think you can see right now maybe some of that pressing at the plate. As I mentioned earlier, the power numbers, the slugging isn't really there right now. And this is something similar to what he went through last year. I believe last year, the first couple months, he was hitting about 190 on the season, and everyone was talking about what was wrong with Carlos Santana and what were they going to do with him. And he got really hot in the second half, really turned it on, and ended up having, a pretty productive year, hitting over 25 homers, and as I mentioned, leading the league in walks. And that was a guy that, you know, if you look at advanced metrics, was still above league average. And even right now, despite his struggles, you know, he's been valuable in terms of on-base ability, but they need more from him. You know, I think the days are gone of dreaming of this guy being a 280 to 300 hitter. I think at this point, he's been in the big leagues long enough where we can kind of say he is what he is, but what he needs to be is more of a power hitter, and that's what's kind of been missing.
Yeah, and another guy who's been producing maybe, but not in the way that would be expected or could most help now, Michael Brantley, whose power seems to have vanished. But talk about all those strikeouts. As we talk now, he has 9 more walks than strikeouts. Batting average still just under 300. So it's hard to point and say the guy's not hitting. But no home runs since May 14th. And, you know, the health is somewhat questioned. You know, he does get questioned, is his back a problem? And he's insisting physically he's fine, just the power hasn't been there. What are you seeing from him?
Yeah, I mean, just knowing Brantley and knowing his, drive to be that stand-up teammate and be there for his guys, even if his back is hurting, he's not the guy that's going to come out and say it is, because to him, that's an excuse. And that's just, I mean, you respect him for that, but at the same time, I mean, if this is even a minor issue, you know, that can really screw up your swing and take a lot of the power out, and I think that's what we've seen. You know, but you're right. I mean, when we look at him and we see that average right around 290, 295, and we feel like he's slumping, because he hit for, I think, 327 last year. He had 20 homers. He had the 45 doubles. I mean, he was an all-around threat last year offensively. And we're still seeing some of that consistency. But even within his strikeouts, we're seeing more swing and miss over the last month or so than we did early in the year. Really early in the season, he had very, very few actual swings and misses. And we're seeing that a little bit more. So I don't doubt that the bat is a problem. obviously not problematic enough to keep him out of the lineup, but I think it is problematic enough to take a little bit of a toll on his offense. I think that's what we're seeing.
Well, I'm sure you've talked about this guy plenty, but I haven't had a chance to talk with you about him. Francisco Lindor, he's played 13 mm-hmm. games now, had his first big league home run last week, not something that he's expected to make the trademark of his game, but how's it been to watch this guy in the lineup every day?
You know, it's been fun. You can kind of see some of the different elements of this game. There was one game where he scored on a wild pitch that wasn't that wild from third base. It wasn't that far away from the catcher, and he showed his kind of energy and speed by scoring on that play. And he showed a little bit of his power with that home run. He's looked very athletic in the field. He's a guy who, so far, you've kind of seen slow out of the gates in terms of overall on-base ability. It took him a while to draw a walk, and when he did, he drew two in a game for the first time. So I think that's the area that's going to be a little more slow to come is, you know, getting used to major league pitching and getting used to getting on base more. But they like him in that two-hole, being a switch hitter, a guy who can do some different things, and we've seen a little bit of everything from him. I don't think it's been up to the level that he will be. But again, a big trademark for him is his defense, and that's been pretty strong so far. And that was a big idea between bringing him and Giovanni Urshela up at third base. You know, both those guys are pretty green in terms of experience, but they're both above average defenders. And when they had Chisenhall and Jose Ramirez on that left side, you know, left a little something to be desired, and they feel like they shored up some things defensively there. But when you're going with two kids, you're going to, you know, kind of live and die with the offensive inconsistency. I think that's been there a little bit. But, you know, so far I think it's been fun to watch Lindor, see some of the elements he brings. I think, you know, you'll see improvement as the year goes on.
Hey, one last quick question. It looks like Jason Kipnis is going to go back to the All-Star game. Other than Kipnis, if the Indians had one other candidate, who would you say is their second-best candidate?
Well, I think Brantley's still in that mix, you know, given his high average and given, you know, being on the field as much as he has and being in the heart of that lineup. And actually, this might be surprising, but I think Corey Kluber has a case. You know, if you don't look at his win-loss record, I mean, this is a guy that you could argue is a top-five starter in the AL right now in terms of strikeouts, in terms of FIP, in terms of WAR, in terms of innings. You know, a lot of those categories, you see his name right at the top, strikeouts per nine, strikeout-to-walk ratio. He's just had no run support, and he's getting hung with a ton of hard luck losses. So his win-loss record looks really ugly right now. And I know that a lot of times you don't want a guy in an All-Star game if he's 3-9 or 3-10. But Kluber's pitched much better than his win-loss record indicates. And, you know, again, I'm not sure if he's going to make it, but I think there's definitely a case there, especially being the reigning Cy Young winner.
Sounds good. I do appreciate it, Jordan. Joined by the inimitable Scott Merkin, a career beat writer for the White Sox on MLB.com. Merk, how you doing?
Not too bad. Just a little layover in between Detroit and St. Louis, and ready to go back into action.
Well, you know, I know when you get to St. Louis Tuesday night, you got the pleasure of looking forward to a Chris Sale start. Seems like no matter how the team around him goes, good or bad, there's always Chris Sale games to look forward to. Has a chance, as you wrote on the site, if he can strike out 10 or more tomorrow night, continue the streak, if he can do it for his eighth straight game, he would join Pedro Martinez as the only pitcher to ever do that. I'm just going to throw these numbers out real quick. I know them, but, man, are they impressive. With his last 68 innings, he has 103 strikeouts. But to me, even more impressive, he's given up only 38 hits and walked 11. So like a 10-to-1 strikeout-to-walk ratio almost, and a crazy low opponent's batting average. You watch him, you see that the fastballs, which this year have been 97 and 98, he's even hit 99. The wipeout slider, the changeup. You've got to pick, of those three pitches in this streak, which do you think has been the most effective, the fastball, the slider, or the changeup?
It's kind of hard to pick. I guess it's kind of like saying, who's your favorite kid, right? I mean, it's they're all so good. I mean, and I think the fact that they're all so good makes him that dominant. You know, we were talking to Tyler Flowers over the weekend about Carlos Rodon and about how he worked his changeup in more to his last start. I think he threw it 20 times. And Flowers alluded to the fact that, you know, getting to be more like Sale where he uses the changeup a little more. And just having that pitch with a 97-mile-an-hour fastball on that delivery and that slider, I think just keeps hitters even more off balance. You know, the instinct, Phil, because Sale arguably is, you know, I think he was one of the best starting pitchers in baseball anyways before this run. Right now, I guess he's 1-1A with Max Scherzer in terms of pure dominance over the last, you know, month or so. But, you know, Sale in St. Louis, where I think they're, what, 29-7 at home, it should be an interesting battle of wills. It may go about 15 innings scoreless, and assuming the bullpen can hold up after Sale walks out of there, the way things have been going. But I don't know. You've seen him, too. It's hard to pick a pitch just because everything has worked. You know, once he kind of got through that first month, which, you know, whether he says, I understand he hurt his foot and not his arm, but, you know, he needed a little time to get his feet under him. Like, you know, that's what spring training is for. He didn't have any of it. He heard it before, you know, like really right as workout started. Once he got that under him, he has just been to another level, just kind of ridiculous. You know, I think he's dropped his ERA from like 5.89 to just around 3 right now. It's hard to say which one. It just depends on the situation, depends on the hitter. Some games he'll feature more changeups. Some games he'll go more sliders. Some games he's focusing more on just fastball command, and he's excellent and almost unhittable. And I mean, I'm not stretching it when saying almost unhittable with all of them.
Yeah, I agree. I think the answer is the fastball, because when he needs to put a guy away, when he gets in the seventh, eighth inning, I think that's still the one that he thinks is the best, as good as the other two are. I think he reaches back, and, you know, that from that arm angle he throws, the 97, 98, all of a sudden is looking like 104, and there's nobody that can catch up to it when he throws it. But,
is that fun to watch. Isn't it? That's that second gear that Robbins talked about and that you hear scouts talk about and that Nolan Ryan had and Sandy Koufax had and Randy Johnson had. And, you know, it's something that separates really good pitchers. And I'm, you know, a guy like Jose Quintana, you know, a guy who with a few more wins would probably be a perennial all-star. And I know everyone hates the win stat at this point or whatever, but, you know, nonetheless, a very good pitcher. And then you take Sale on that second gear, that finishing kick, so to speak, and it puts you as an elite hurler.
Yep. Okay. And now back to reality. Talking about the White Sox beyond Chris Sale, you got a team that, even with Chris Sale on this run, they're 9-16 in June. And I heard this stat, a factoid recently, which kind of startled me. Since the start of the 2013 season, the White Sox record, which is 168-230, it has now become the second worst in baseball. It's been, at the start of the year, I think the Cubs and the Twins had a worse record, but they've started winning. The White Sox continuing to lose. And all of a sudden, that record is only a little bit better than the Astros. So a team that's 29th record over the last 2.5 seasons. Interesting to me, the interview over the weekend with Kenny Williams basically saying, in essence, it's my fault, blame me. I thought Rick Hahn was the general manager, but Kenny said that if, you know, when Jerry Reinsdorf is angry, the first call goes to him, not to Rick Hahn. So to me, it all kind of raises the question. What's your view? Is it just a collaboration of three individuals that are making these calls between Jerry Reinsdorf, Ken Williams, and Rick Hahn, or who ultimately is setting the, you know, making the trades and running the baseball operation?
Well, it's a couple of interesting points you make in the whole lead in there. You know, number one, the record since 2013. I hear that a lot from people who, you know, want Robin shipped out of town, Robin Ventura. And I understand the anger of Sox fans because, as you know, Phil, when you have the excitement they had going into the season, which was probably at the highest peak I've seen since probably after the 05 World Series championship. When you have that excitement and it fails, you know, big time. I mean, they're 10 under and not looking like a team, which Kenny said on Friday night when he was talking to all of us, you know, not really, there's not a lot of signs from a team right now that they're going to turn it around. You have that same level of anger. You know, you don't get a lot of people who say, this is our year. Look at the additions we made. We're going to win it all. And then when they fall short, say, oh, well, we tried. You know, that doesn't happen in this day and age in sports. But I think the record since 2013 basically points up that teams like Houston and the Cubs and the Twins have had better 2015s than the White Sox. If you want to point to one year that you want to say, well, that's a disappointment with Robin at the helm, I'd say this year, and he'd be the first one to say it. He told us at Sox Fest that, you know, when we talked about the expectations, he said, that's where we want to be. You know, we're not running from this. We want to win the division. We want to win the World Series. It's not like we're scared to be good. But as you know, Phil, you've been around Chicago. I mean, in 13, after they realized pretty quickly that team wasn't going anywhere, they, you know, quasi blew it up and started making some trades. So you're not going to win much the rest of that year. 14 wasn't designed to win. That was designed to kind of develop some of these younger guys, build the core a little bit more. And this year was. And this year has been a big disappointment. So, like I said, I still think this is on the players. This is a veteran team. This is not a team that's, you know, developmental. This is not a college team where you got to go out and instruct them on bunting and base running and defense. These are a lot of veteran players on this team, and they're just not performing. They're not playing well together. And in terms of the Kenny Rick thing, it's an interesting dynamic. But, you know, the way I took that is that, you know, Jerry and Kenny have worked together for a long time. They know each other very well, and there's a chain of command to work at any company. In our company, there's a chain of command, you know, where someone will say something to someone and then they'll say something to the next person. You know, sometimes there's a direct connection, but there's a chain of command in most well-run businesses. So I understand that. You know, I don't know, did he need to say it? I think we all know that Kenny is Rick's, you know, boss in terms of the chain of command, but I think Rick is making the moves. Rick Hahn is too astute a guy, too good of a baseball guy to take a job where he was just holding a position. He would not have agreed to this role if it wasn't, you know, if he didn't have general manager powers. So, yeah, is Kenny in it? Of course he is. Is Jerry in it? Well, of course he is. Jerry's the guy who calls the shots and he owns the team. But I think, you know, there's a chain of command, and I think that's what Kenny was saying. I don't think it was – I understand that it was perceived as, I don't know, kind of a I'm in charge type of comment, but I think it's just, you know, this is – it was almost kind of saying – well, when he gets mad, I'm the first one to kind of hear about it type of thing. Not like as a bragging thing, like, who do you think hears it first type of deal. So, but they all work well together. You know, they all, I mean, from top to bottom, they all work well together.
Yeah, I also think it's in keeping with Ken's character that he, you know, he's like a pitcher who's pitching, but he's a little bit hurt and he's never going to admit he's hurt. Kenny is you know, always going to express that.
Thanks for listening. This is Phil Rogers. This has been MLB.com Extras, American League Central Edition.